Nagarokamasutta, the citadel. This discourse appears in Anguttara Nikaya, the book of 7, the great chapter. Monks, when the king's citadel in the marches is well provided with 7 requisites of a fortress and can obtain at will easily and without trouble the 4 kinds of supplies, it is said to be one that cannot be undone by outside foe or perfidious ally. So this is the king's neighboring, king's fortress in a neighboring town, far away. so it has to be protected very well. With what 7 requisites of a fortress is it well provided? Here we go to the king of the bordering city. There are pillars on strong foundations, deeply embedded, well dug in, immovable and unshakable. With the first fortress requisite, is the king's citadel well provided for the protection of the inmates and for the warding off of outsiders? So there's a very big pillar, strong pillar. Again, we go to the kings of the border and citadel. There are ditches that are deep and broad. So there's a moat around this fortress. With the second fortress requisite, is the king's citadel well provided for the protection of the inmates and for the warding off of outsiders? Again, we go to the kings of the border and city. There is a pathway built broad and high above. With the third fortress requisite, is the king's citadel well provided for the protection of the inmates and for the warding off of outsiders. So you can see that inside that parapet wall, there is this sort of big path. Again, we go to the king of the border and city. There are many weapons kept in stock, arrows, spear and sword. With the fourth fortress requisite, is the king's citadel well provided for the protection of the inmates and for the warding off of outsiders? Again, we go to the king of bordering city. There are many army personnel living, such as elephant riders, horse riders, charioteers, bowmen, standard bearers, cleaners of clothes, those who deal with food, dignified royal princes, special task forces and soldiers in occupation. With the fifth fortress requisite, is the king's citadel well provided for the protection of the inmates and for the warding off of outsiders? Again, we go to the king of the border and city. There is a wise gatekeeper who stops the unknown from entering and allows the known to enter. With the sixth fortress requisite, is the king's citadel well provided for the protection of the inmates and for the warding off outsiders? Again, we go to the king of the bordering city. There is the rampart, both high and wide, covered with a coat of plaster. With the seventh fortress requisite, is the king's citadel well provided for the protection of the inmates and for the warding off of outsiders? What are the 4 kinds of supplies it can obtain at will, easily without trouble? Here we put the king's bordering city. There are great stores of grass, wood, water for the convenience of the inmates, for their comfort, for their well-being and for the warding off of outsiders. Again, we go in the king's bordering city. There are great stores of rice and corn for the convenience of the inmates, for their comfort, for their well-being and for the warding off of outsiders. Again, we go in the king's bordering city. There are great stores of sesame, beans, cereals for the convenience of the inmates, for their comfort, for their well-being and for the warding off of outsiders. Again, we go in the king's bordering city. There are great stores of medicine such as ghee, butter, oil, honey, sugar, salt for their comfort, for their well-being and for the warding off of outsiders. Verily, monks, when Raja's citadel in the marches is well provided with these 7 requisites and can obtain at will, easily and without trouble, these 4 kinds of supplies, it is said to be one without which cannot be undone by outside foe or perfidious ally. In just the same way, monks, when an Arahant disciple is possessed of the 7 good things and can obtain at will, easily and without trouble, the 4 higher states of the mind, highly mental, bringing comfort here now. The Arahant disciple is said to be one who cannot be undone by Mara, undone by the evil one. of what seven good things is he possessed. Just as Raja's citadel in the marches has the pillar deeply embedded, well dug in, immovable and unshakable for the protection of the inmates and for the warding of the outsiders, even so monk and Aryan disciple has faith. He believes in Tathagata Sivekvi. So the faith is the pillar. Faith normally doesn't, you know, if the pillar is not well dug in the on the earth, it will shake and sort of thing. How the pillar goes down is by deep digging, right? What do we use for the deep digging? It's the wisdom. Using the wisdom, one dig it, well dug into the, this one. So, the blessed one is an arahant. This is the meaning of the Itipiso Bhagava, the Gatha. Perfectly enlightened, Samma Sambuddha. Accomplishing true knowledge and conduct, Vijjacharana Sampanna. So when we say the knowledge and conduct, here we are talking about first three knowledges. The knowledge is that the Buddha can recall his past births, and he can recall anybody else's past births, that this person was on such and such a form before and now like that. That's one of the knowledges. And then the other one is that Buddha can say that this particular person is that having done this karma, you know, these things, as a result of that one, he pass away and born in over here. So it's like someone entering a village, then he after entering the village from such a place, and then passing, going out of the village from such a place, like that Buddha can say this person, having done this sort of karma, that is going from this birth to next birth and so on. And the third one is Buddha got the knowledge of the destruction of desires. Whatever the desires, the lust, malice and the delusion, Buddha got the knowledge how to destruct them. So those are the three things. When we say charana, that is the conduct, there are 15 charana dhamma. We discussed this one before, and we are going to discuss 11 of them today, and out of those 15, and so I will cover the other 4. So one of those conduct is that this dhamma was we discussed in the Seka Patipada Sutta. We discussed this one before. And how is the disciple of the Noble One consummating virtue? There is the case where the disciple of the Noble One is virtuous. He dwells restrained in accordance with the Patimokkha, the virtue, whatever the virtue that they are established on. For example, a householder have 5 virtues. So that is what he is actually practicing. And who is training in the Eightfold Path will have this the additional virtue about this, you know, the frivolous talk, slander and sort of thing. So he trains himself, you know, he behave well in that activity, so in virtue category. That's the first one. So virtue is one of the charana conduct. And how does the disciple of the Noble One guard the doors to his sense faculties? There is the case where the disciple of the Noble One, on seeing a form with the eye, does not grasp at any theme or variations by which, if he were dwell without restraint over the faculty of the eye, evil unskillful qualities such as greed or distress might assail him. So therefore he is actually restraining his faculty. So that's the second one. Similarly for the sound, smelling, taste and so on. And the third one is, how does the disciple of the Noble One knows moderation in eating? There is the case where the disciple of the Noble One, considering it appropriately, takes his food not playfully, nor for intoxication, nor for putting on bulk, nor for beautification, but simply for the survival and the continuance of this body, for ending afflictions, for the support of the holy life, thinking I will destroy the old feelings and not create new feelings. So that is the third one. So moderation in eating. And the fourth one is, how is the disciple of the Noble One devoted to wakefulness? There is the case where a monk during the day, sitting and pacing back and forth, cleanses his mind of any qualities that would hold the mind in check. So all the virtues, first words, second words, and so on, he does what? He cleanses his mind from the hindrances. The sensual desire, he check whether I do have sensual desire for the day or ill will sort of thing. So these are the four things. So these four plus the 11 that we are going to discuss today complete this Charana Dharma. So when you recollect Buddha, one has to actually recollect these 15 plus the three knowledges. It is that big. And when you actually recollect, then you actually learn the Dhamma and master the Dhamma. And then you see the Dhamma. By seeing the Dhamma, you see Buddha. So that's the only way. So that's how we are digging down. And Buddha is fortunate. Know of the world. Buddha knows all the worlds. You know, the world of the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, and that's one thing. And all the other worlds in scope of those things, he is also known. Unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed. Anuttaro Buddhasadhamma Sarathi. That one is big because Buddha sent these people into 8 directions. That's why it is called unsurpassed leader, because that Buddha said that in Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha said why he is called, it is said the incomparable tamer of those to be tamed. Why was it said so? The elephant tamer makes the elephant to be tamed go in one direction. Either east, west, north or south. Similarly, horse tame and so on. So the Buddha also sent people in 8 directions. That's why it is called that he's tame of the world. So what are these 8 directions? In matter, to see matter. This is the first direction. It is like that one would have an internal perception that this is blue or something, having developed the blue casino, for example. Having obtained that sign, then the perception, then he applies the blue to the whole world. So it makes the whole thing blue now. Now when you do that, and eventually you would master that blue, and then you can see that I know and see, in the sense that one can go beyond that blue. See, it is this color that is actually grasping our mind. The yellow.
I still what you say that you say that I know and see. What does it mean?
Well, he knows and see that they got the knowledge that this is simply the blue. There's nothing else, and he's not clinging to that those things. The mastery over these sensual things. You see, if you see, let's say somebody got blue eyes. And you would see that blue, this blue eye is really nice or something. Okay. Now, what if I make the whole world blue? If I make the whole world blue, then that blue eye is tiny little thing and useless and not even amount of thinking. Right? But the whole thing is because I got enough of blue. And then I can go beyond that blue. My mind won't be holding to that blue. So that's one liberation. So it's blue, red, yellow and so on. You can apply it to other colors as well. That is the first direction. And to be released, the second one is the internal, with the internal immaterial perception to external matter. So he's putting this thing to the external world completely. And to be released in the pleasant end. That is that one, let's say one maintain the loving kindness for a long time, for first quarter, second quarter, third quarter and so on. Having maintained that he see this one is pleasant. And then he make it unlimited, apramana. Having made it unlimited, there is liberation on that one. And then one would overcome all perceptions of matter and aversion and not attending to diverse perceptions. With space is boundless, to attain the sphere of space, that is the fourth direction. So the space is infinite, is the fourth, the liberation or the direction. And the fifth one is the consciousness is infinite, attaining that one. The Sixth one is the plane of nothingness. The seventh one is the neither perception nor non-perception. And the eighth one is that the cessation of feeling and perceptions. So Nirodha Samapatti. So those are the directions Buddha would send someone to tame that person. So now that is what means by Anuttaro Purusadam Sarati. So you can see that if I go to the space is infinite, then I have done with the material things. Because how can I go to the space is infinite? Because this material things, I am not paying any attention to the material things, because I am done with it, I have no connection to that one. So there is liberation from the material things in that sense. And the teacher of devas and humans, the enlightened one, the blessed one. So with faith as pillar, the Arahant disciple abandons unrighteous ways, he makes righteousness become. He abandons what is blameworthy, he makes blamelessness become. He bears himself in pureness of the first good thing he is possessed. This blameworthy, the Pali word is savajjam. That means that the mundane, unskilled states, you know, the akusal things, mundane, unskilled ones. So he abandons the blameworthy things, mundane, unskilled actions, unskilled things, and he makes the blamelessness become. So attain this mundane skill states because of this faith. Faith purifies the mind. It's like a very clean jewel or something that because our mind is normally corrupted with the sensual desires, ill will and all sort of thing. And when you recollect someone who hasn't got those sensual desires, you know, the lobha dosa moha, the lust, malice and the delusion, then our mind become pure because of the thinking about that person. If you think about a lustful person, then your lust grows. If you think lust-free person, then it goes in that direction. That is the first one. Just as the citadel has a moat, both deep and wide, for the protection of the inmates, even so monk and Arahant disciple is conscientious. He is ashamed of misconducting himself in deed, word and thought, ashamed of falling into evil and unrighteous ways. With conscientiousness as a moat, the Arahant disciple abandons unrighteous ways and makes righteousness become. Then this is the second good thing he possessed. So this one has to be understood in bit detail. It's bit deep. We will try. There is one discourse about this conscientiousness or the healing. It's appear in the Anguttara Nikaya Book of Sevens again. Monks, when conscientiousness and fear of blame are lacking, the control of the senses is perforce destroyed in one who lacks the conscientiousness and fear of blame. So it's by force it is getting destroyed. If I don't have the conscientiousness, that is the shame, shamelessness of misconducting, and the fear of blame, if I don't have those two, then my senses, you know, are sort of destroyed, because then I go with whatever the form and sound that comes up with. With the control of the senses is lacking, if I am not controlling my senses, moral practice is perforce. By necessity it is destroyed in one who lacks the control of the senses. If I don't control my senses, then I don't get the moral practice. The moral practice is lacking. When moral practice is lacking, right concentration is perforce destroyed in one who lacks moral practice. So I am not getting the right concentration if I don't have the control of the senses. Sorry, moral practice. with the right concentration is lacking, true knowledge and vision are perforce destroyed in one who lacks right concentration. When the true knowledge and vision are lacking, the aversion and dispassion, that's the Nibbida Virada, are perforce destroyed in one who lacks true knowledge and vision. And with aversion and dispassion are lacking, emancipated knowledge and vision are perforce destroyed in one who lacks the aversion and knowledge. So the freedom and knowledge won't be there. So it's all connected with that. So that is this, if I don't have this hiri, or the conscientiousness and fear of blame, then I don't get the control of the senses. Now, I don't think you understand that much, but there is some understanding over there. And I will take a little bit further, but this one is a bit deeper as well. Now, we take this the other way around, that is, let's say I don't have, I'm not ashamed of doing bad things, that the ahiri, the Pali word is ahiri, the meaning of that one is not ashamed of what we should be ashamed of. There are things that we should be ashamed of, but we are not ashamed of what we should be ashamed of. So I take a bit of an example over here. We know that pig, for example, eat excrement. That one is the edible food for the pig. Now, pig is excrement, and we look at it and we sort of ashamed of what that pig is doing. So the men with good eyes, or the divine beings and sort of thing, they look at it, they see this one, right? And you can see, we also eat food. And in the Brahma world, they don't eat that kind of food. We have sense pleasures. Brahma world, they don't have this kind of sense pleasures. They are disgusted with these things. So now we can actually see, a human being would see that when pig is eating this excrement, and one would be thinking, this is something pig should be ashamed of. Right? That's how we think. Let's take the example of the pig. But what pig is doing, pig is actually holding the asubha as subha. That means that it is actually thinking this disgusting thing as the as sort of fair. But it's a foul nature over there, but it thinks it's fair. Oh, it sees the beauty in the ugliness. But you can see the pig live with it and have sensual desire, and it keeps on saying that this is fair and fair. With this action that pig is doing, lead to something called idam sacchabhinivesa kaya gantha. It is that what it says is, this is the only truth, all else is false. Pig is saying, this is fair, this is fair. But for someone with the intelligent person, that is actually foul. Okay, so Dhamma Sangini in the Abhidhamma Pitaka says, every wrong view is included in this Idam Sacchabhinivesa Kaya Krantha, or the wording that says this is the only truth. So you can see, so what pig is saying, that this thing is fair, not foul. But if you think about the human way, you can even see that this is not so. It is false. In the Aryan discipline, you can also see that this asubha subha, or that the fair in the foul is wrong. Although human beings are saying it. So, you can see, since this is the wrong thing, vichaditti, you know, that there is this, the falsehood over here, because of this wrong view, what is included in the pig's case is the wrong view. Because of the wrong view, where are we going? We are going for wrong mitya sankappa, wrong thought. When we get the wrong thought, what we get? We get wrong speech, that is lying. So that means you can see we are going in three bad ways of conduct. Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, harsh speech, frivolous talks and sort of thing. So what happened over here? That particular view, you know, that the thought and the view, whatever thing we had about this particular thing, saying it is fair, which is actually false, so that whole thing went in wrong path. So you can see, for us also, humans, the sensual desire and sort of thing that we say is fair and, you know, sort of thing. Having seen a person, or having seen food or whatever thing, we sort of grab it and as a fair thing. But in the RN context, you can see that it is sort of a lie. So we go in wrong way. So if someone actually got this understanding that it is the foul nature, it's not the fair nature, that means even in the case of the fig, you can see the pig come to understanding one day that excrement is this asubha, it is foul. That is this right view. And it will know that I have been holding to excrement and it will let it go. Right? And so what it means, let it go means that it is actually nekamma, the renunciation, thought of renunciation come to the pig's mind. And it will also express that this excrement is as foul, not fair. And that is the truth. That is the truth in the RN sense, it is the truth. So therefore it is refraining from lying. These three kind of bad conduct. It is that deep. This particular thing, Aire, is that deep. But normally you can see Buddha has summarized in three or four words. It goes into that level. So when someone got this hiri, or the conscientiousness, or the ashamed of misconducting, that is in these three actions, you can see that this you get the right thought because of that.
Going back to that one, now the food or anything like anything that gives us the sensual pleasure, if we are clinging to that one, and Brahmi, Brahma world, we can see we are similar to it.
That's right. Exactly. I take the pig as an example so that we can actually see what we are doing. They see it that way as well. RN sees that way as well. Yeah. So, just as the citadel has a road going round it, both high and wide, for the protection of the inmates, even so monks, an RN disciple has fear of blame. If he is to be blamed for misconduct indeed, word and thought, he fears the blame of having fallen into evil and unrighteous ways. With the fear of blame as an encircling road, the RN disciple abandons unrighteous ways and makes righteousness become. Of this third good thing is he possessed. So that one is also strong as the other one. So now this person is afraid that because I have these sensual desires, that I can be born in hell, animal realm, and in the plane of departed. So I'm afraid of that one. And so previous one is ashamed of that. Now I'm fear of that one. So it is that strong. Just as the citadel has a great armory of spear and sword for the protection of the inmates, even so monks, an RN disciple has heard much, and there is a retaining, a storing of things heard. Those dhammas, lovely in the beginning, lovely in the middle, and lovely in the end, which set forth in meaning and detail the godly life, wholly fulfilled, perfectly pure, even those are learned by him, resolved upon, made familiar by speech, pondered over in mind, well penetrated by right view, with learning as an armory. The RN disciple abandons unrighteous ways and makes righteousness become. Of these fourth good things is he possessed. So, Buddha said this learning of this Dhamma, hearing and learning and remembering that one, is like the weapons. How is becoming like a weapon? You see, if I have a sensual desire, and if I know If I do the contemplation about the foulness of the body, I can get rid of this one. If I know that if I control my senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue and body, if I have heard from the Buddha or the Aryans, then I can use it. If I do not know, then I do not know how to do that. If I know that I have the ill will or anger, I know I can develop the loving kindness. Since I have heard that loving kindness is go against this one. So this is my weapon. So for each one of them, I can have my weapon. This is learning. So Buddha said that Aryanisable has heard much and there is retaining. It should retain in the mind that I have heard, I should be able to remember. And also the pondered over in mind, just hearing is not enough. The storing is not enough. Should have reflected upon it, you know, thought about it before. So that's the fourth one. And the fifth one, just as the citadel has a large body of troops stationed there, that is to say, elephant riders, horse riders, charioteers and bowmen, standard bearers, cleaners of clothes and so forth for the protection of inmates, even so monks, an Aryan disciple abide, steers in energy, to be right, rid of unrighteousness, to follow righteous things. Steadfast, firm in advance, he lays not aside the yoke of righteousness with energy as an armed force. The Aryan disciple abandons unrighteous ways and makes righteousness become. Of this fifth good thing is he possessed. So we will look at this effort in little bit detail. This one is appearing in Netti Prakarana, Kuttaka Nikaya. And so if we sort of go for one part in effort, effort is that the producer's will for the non-arising of unarisen evil unprofitable ideas. Whatever the unprofitable ideas, that we are not going to let them arise. Makes effort, instigates energy, exerts cognizance and endeavors. So that's the idea. Whatever the things that it has not arisen, I'm not going to let them arise. So what are those things that I haven't got now at this moment that can arise later on? For example, now here I'm okay, but I'm going to shopping mall. What are the things that can come to my mind? It explains they are thinking with sensual desire, kama vitakka, thinking with ill will, vyapada vitakka, thinking with cruelty, vinsa. Those are the things that can come to my mind. So if I go on shopping or something, you can see that having seen something beautiful, I want to grab it. Having seen a beautiful person, then I have something to go with it. I am constructing something. So these are the things. So I'm just taking one thing out of those four. You can see these are the things that can happen. So see, the Buddha said over here, it has got a large body of troops stationed therein. The Aryan disciple has got this energy. So he got this the troops to do these things. Like that, you know, person is going for a war. Is well, very well prepared, right? Very well prepared with the weapons and so on, and they got the army and all those things, right? If these people are coming in this direction, we attack this way. Likewise, one would control this eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind, not letting them this coming in our way, not coming to the body. So that's the effort. So I just explained only one part. And similarly, the effort as the producer's will for the abandoning of arisen, evil unprofitable ideas. He produces will for the arising of unarisen profitable ideas. Whatever thing it is not there with me, then I will develop it. And he produces will for endurance and non-forgetting, increase, abundance, maintenance in being and fulfillment of arising profitable ideas. So those are the four things, the four efforts. So the first one we discuss, what is that the unarisen evil unprofitable ideas, that means the ideas that I don't have now but I can get, that is this thinking with sensual desire. thinking with ill will and thinking with cruelty. And what are the arisen evil, unprofitable ideas, what I have got already with me. They are the underlying tendencies, the root of the unprofitable, that is this lobha dosa moha, you know, the greed, greed, the anger, and then the delusion. Those are the things. What are the unarisen profitable ideas? They are the faculties that belong to the stream enterer. Whatever the stream enterer has got three faculties, you know, that the faith and so on. Those are the ones what I have to put effort to get. What are the arisen profitable ideas? They are the faculties that belong to him who stands on the path. So any RN, you know, the first one, the second one, the third one, and fourth one, all those things, what are the faculties, whatever faculties they got, those are the ones that one has to develop. And so that's the effort part, those are the troops. And this one also says about the next one that we are going to discuss, that is the mindfulness. And that whatever he shuts off thinking with sensual desire is the mindfulness faculty. Because of the mindfulness faculty, we shuts off thinking with sensual desire. So, just as the citadel has a gatekeeper, clever, intelligent and wise, who refuses entrance to the unknown but admits those he knows, for the protection of the inmates, even so monks, an RN disciple has mindfulness and is endowed in the highest degree with mindfulness and discrimination. He remembers and calls to mind things done and said long ago. With mindfulness as a gatekeeper, the RN disciple abandons righteous ways and makes the righteousness become of the sixth good thing is he possessed. So here the mindfulness is the fourfold, mindfulness regarding the body, and mindfulness regarding feeling, mindfulness regarding the thoughts, and the mindfulness regarding the doctrine or the teaching. So these are the four mindfulness. So for example, in the first one we know we are mindful that this is this, the matter or the form. And we would know the arising phenomena of that one and the passing away phenomena. And regarding the feeling, we know that there are these three kinds of feeling, pleasurable feeling, displeasure feeling, neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable feeling, and we know the arising phenomena and the passing phenomena of those. And similarly, thoughts, the various kind of thoughts, you know, that the thought is delusion, we should know that thought is delusion. And when the mind is the lustful mind, we should know the lustful mind as lustful mind, lust-free mind as lust-free mind, hatred mind as hatred mind, hate-free mind as hate-free mind, and so on. And we should know the arising phenomena and the passing away phenomena. And again, we know the doctrine, the Dhamma, the Eightfold Path, those things. And so, since we know these things, then we are mindful when these things are arising. Let's say someone is coming in front of me, and then I know if that person is beautiful or something, then there is this sensual desire thinking can come to my mind. I'm mindful about that one, and I also mindful that this particular thing is actually foul nature, is not the fair nature. And whatever feeling that I have, we all are included in suffering. They are not to welcome those things. So all this knowledge is there with the mindfulness. It's like the gatekeeper. You know, the gatekeeper is not allowing the other things. So these are for me, that is the skillful states. I'm allowing the skillful states. Whatever the skillful states I can develop by dhyana, concentration, all those things, they are allowed. The unskilled states, I'm not allowing. So therefore, that like the person who knows that this person is, you know, known to the kingdom, known to this one, no harm, so that person is allowed. Harmful persons, not allowed. They like to get the gatekeeper's function. Just as the Raja's citadel in the Majas has a rampart, both high and wide, covered with a coat of plaster for the protection of the inmates and for the warding off of outsiders, even so monks, the RN disciple has wisdom. Endowed is he with wisdom as to the way of growth and decay, that is the rise and fall, the RN penetration of the way to the utter destruction of ill. With wisdom as a coat of plaster, the RN disciple abandons unrighteous way, he makes righteousness become. He abandons what is blameworthy, he makes blamelessness become. He bears himself in pureness. Of this seventh good thing is he possessed. So when we have wisdom we are talking about, we know about the arising phenomenon and the passing away phenomenon. We know that it's suffering, and this suffering comes to arise from this one, and the cessation of suffering is such, and the path leading to cessation of suffering is such. So it is known. So when we say rise and fall, that we would know that this is the arising phenomena. Arising phenomena, it can be thought in five ways. That is that when the ignorance, with the origin, arising of ignorance, the arising of form. And with the arising of the craving, the arising of form. Regarding the five aggregates, one would know that these things come to arise when there is craving. When there is this kamma, there is this arising of form. And when there is this edible food, arising of edible food means the arising of the form. And when there is something arises, like a birth, then we can see this the origin of this form. So there's five ways to see the form, feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness. So this is the Udayabhijnana, the rising and the rise and fall phenomena. And it is the reverse. The fall is that one does not, with the cessation of ignorance comes the cessation of form. So that knowledge should be there.
This ignorance is what we try to get opposed to illusion.
Ignorance is not knowing the Four Noble Truth, avijja.
Delusion is something
similar. The delusion is normally, is also the similarity is there. There is a subtle difference of this wording. Moha, that is this delusion, has the idea of covering the real nature. Avijja, or the ignorance, on the other hand, it prevents you from penetrating. It doesn't allow you to deep dig in to that thing. So the other one sort of misunderstand because of the delusion. The avijja, or ignorance, is preventing you from deeply digging to that thing. You can't actually see that in the pig's case, that it is actually a foul thing. Right? For example, sensual pleasures, people regard as pleasure because they used to do it for a long, long time. So one can't penetrate and see this sensual pleasure is bad for me. And the delusion is sort of covering the whole thing.
The person with the delusion can still know some
of dharma,
but it can't develop because of the delusion.
Yes. There is this, that some, he has got the wisdom to a certain extent, that's what you are trying to say. The delusion occurs, the avijja comes in the middle actually. So these 12 perversions we are talking about, the foul nature, we are saying fair. So there is the perception, the thought and the view. And similarly the pleasure, actually it is suffering, we say is pleasurable. So there is the perception, the thought and the view. And regarding certain things, we have a perception that we are taking these things as self. So similarly we have perception, thought and the view. And things are impermanent, so there is this perception that it is permanent, the person thought that it is permanent, and the view that is permanent. These 12 things create this avijja. Avijja, the closest condition for avijja to arise, or the ignorance to arise, is these 12. When we get these 12, then we get what we call that idam saccha vinivesakaya grantha, or that person actually think that this is the truth, all else is false. Buddha comes and tells you that it is suffering and so on. But for me, those are the things that are true. And that particular condition, by that time I am holding to my perception thoroughly. It's called papancha, papancha granthati. So you have the tightly bound with this one. Because of that one, then I get the ignorance, the delusion. So delusion was created because of the avijja. Avijja was created because of those perversions. So when we have the delusion, then it creates, because it's moha, then we go in the wrong path, the wrong view, wrong thought, wrong speech and all those things. So there's a linking in that way. And so those are the seven things that the Raja's Sitadel is sort of possessed with. And just as in Raja's Sitadel, what form using is highly mental, bringing comfort here now, can he obtain at will easily and without trouble? Just as in Raja's Citadel, in the marges, there are great stores of grass, wood and water for the convenience of the inmates, for their comfort, for their well-being and for the warding off of outsiders. Even so, monk and Aryan disciple, aloof from pleasures of the senses, aloof from unskilled state of the mind, enters on and abides in the first meditation, which is accompanied by initial thought and discursive thought, is born of aloofness, and is rapturous and joyful. This is the abiding is for his own convenience, for his own comfort, for his own well-being, and for faring to the Nirvana. So it is for his comfort. So he is attaining the first jhana concentration. So you can see that when he understands that pig's case, you know, the sensual desire sort of things are bad and sort of thing, so he will have the thought of renunciation of those things. And so his mind is going for thought of renunciation, thought of non-harming, thought of non-ill will. Because of those thoughts, and he is going out of those sensual desires, and he attained the first jhana, concentration. Having attained concentration, now he is actually, he has got the comfort, because previously he was burdened with sensual desire and so on. Now he is not. He is not affected by those things. So, he is comfortable. So, it was compared to this, the grass, wood and water, you know, the essential things, right? And then Buddha said, just as in the citadel there are great stores of rice and corn for the convenience of the inmates, even so, an Aryan disciple with subsiding of applied and sustained thought enters and abides in the second jhana, which has internal confidence, born of concentration, full of joy and ease, free from applied and sustained thought, wherein the mind becomes calm and one-pointed, for his own convenience, for his own comfort, for his own well-being, and for faring to the Nibbana. So the second jhana, Buddha was sort of comparing to having this rice, corn, and sort of thing. Previously, the grass, water sort of thing. Now the second jhana is a bit smooth. And then the third one, Buddha said, just as the citadel has a great stores of sesame, beans and other cereals for the convenience of the inmates, even so monks and Aryan disciple, with the fading away as well of rapture, a bhikkhu dwells equanimous and mindful and clearly comprehending. He experiences happiness with the body. He enters and dwells in the third jhana, of which noble ones declare he is equanimous, mindful, one who dwells happily. This abiding is for his own convenience, for his own comfort, for his own well-being and for fare into the Nibbana. So the third jhana is more smooth, and you get that the beans and good cereals over there, because he's so happy in that case, because then he went away from the rapture. The first jhana and the second jhana had the rapture. Rapture is sort of something starting in your head or somewhere, it's just flowing through the whole body. So that the bodily, after a long time, if you have the rapture, then there is this bodily weariness as well because of that. Because it's sort of running for a long time. And the pleasurable state without the rapture is really good, because you are not even tired to that extent in that one. And just as the Raja's Citadel in the marches, there are great stores of medicaments, that is to say ghee, fresh butter, oil, honey, sugar, and sold for the convenience of the inmate, for their comfort, for their well-being, and for the warding off of outsiders. Even so, monks, an Aryan disciple, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous passing away of the joy and displeasure, bhikkhu enters and dwells in the fourth jhana, which is neither painful nor pleasant. With the utter purity of mindfulness, this abiding is for his own convenience, for his own comfort, for his own well-being, and for faring to the nibbana. You see, in the third jhana, there is this pleasure. One could be sort of, can be biased towards the pleasure. What happens? Pleasure ceases. Whenever pleasure ceases, we get displeasure, right? In the fourth jhana, having known that this scenario, one would prefer, I don't want the pleasure, I don't want the displeasure. So he's so stable, not falling, because when the pleasure falls, pass away, then we get the displeasure. But in the fourth jhana, there's nothing to fall away, because that the pleasure and the displeasure, it doesn't change, so you maintaining the equanimity state. These are the four musings, highly mental, high bringing comfort here and now. He can obtain at will, easily and without trouble. Monks, when the Aryan disciple is possessed of these seven good things, and can obtain at will, easily and without trouble, these four musings, the Aryan disciple is said to be one who cannot be undone by Mara, undone by the evil one. I got a picture here about the one of the this thing. You can see this water over here is the moat, and there is a strong pillar like the Raja's, the citadel, well dug into that one. So this is the Hiri, or the shame of misconduct. And then there is this the path inside that one. It is this the fear of blame. If I have the sensual desires and sort of thing, then I can go to hell and sort of thing. And then there is this armory, that is that is learning. And then the fourth one, the troops, is the effort. And then there's the gatekeeper somewhere here, that is the mindfulness. And then there is the warlord here, it's the wisdom, it's the court. There's the wisdom court, so that even a fly can't go through that one. You know, it is that big. And I can see there are other discourses. Buddha said that, so there is someone is going through this road inside that one, and he's checking the plaster, you know, whether there is any hole. So that is this fear of blame, whether I will go to hell or something. So he's checking the wisdom plaster, whether it is perfect. There's another discourse, similar discourse over there. So
that's what you do in meditation, is that?
That's right. Not allowing anything. This is the internal. This is the motto here. The water is the external. So it's keep those sensual pleasures far away from you. So internally, if something has creep in close, let's protect it as well. So, with a great wisdom, Buddha thought about this. When we see these things, we just see the the body, the soul, the bricks and so on. But
everything is for a person who knows the mind, who would like to go that path. Otherwise, the other people cannot control that. When they see something, so all the doors are open to get more things rather than preventing.
That's right. Mindfulness is not there, so the gatekeeper is not there. So therefore,
one good example that happened this afternoon, because we were watching the TV and there was something. It's not the one that they were watching. Some music and all these things, and one person said, "Can I get the full DVD of this?" I didn't say anything. I was looking at that picture, and then couldn't control at that stage, and they wanted to see the whole thing about that.
Yes.
And then they said, it's not, if the mind doesn't stop on there, and then they're pleased that they have something to do the whole evening, you know, rather because it's more corruption going on after that.
Yeah.
And not realizing that.
Yeah. You see, what is happening over there is that whenever mind hold of something, so the TV picture was the first thing for him to construct what he or she desires. The picture is nothing. It's just a beautiful object over there. And so with that one, then sensual thoughts are coming up. Those some sensual thoughts are the ones that one would construct from their own, with their qualities. So Buddha said, whenever this happens, then when the consciousness is established in that, then the name and form come to arise. Namrupa. When the name and form comes, then this whole thing, you know, the dependent origination continues. There's no stopping over there. What Buddha is telling us to stop is not let those things come and hold your mind. As soon as it touches the mind, grasp the gratification of that object, then we are done. So as soon as we see, by accident or something, we see it, we have to apply the mindfulness over there and apply the yoniso manasikara, wise attention. No, this is not for me. This is not myself. This is impermanent sort of thing. So to do that, one could be mindful. So the gatekeeper must be very active and not letting these things come in. Otherwise we go. It can happen to anyone because that we have been practicing, living with these things for eons and eons. That's what we have been doing. So if it get hold of, it could be a tiny little thing. It don't have to be a big thing that take hold of our mind and takes us down in that path. So these seven will stop if someone has developed them. And there's quite a lot done over here to remember. So that's what Buddha said, that the learning, one has to learn it, store it in the mind and contemplate it, you know, pondered about it. So those things, you know, the weapons are active. If I have a weapon, if I do not know how to use it, you know, which way to use it, then it is useless. So even that I heard Dhamma, I should have pondered about that Dhamma, thought about it. So therefore I can use it. So this is really, really powerful. And if you actually meditate, having taken this one to mind for, let's say, 1 hour or 2 hours, and try to meditate, you can see your mind is so balanced. It is not going anywhere. It is with you and so balanced without much effort. The effort is needed to get this Dhamma to the mind and contemplate it once by the time of getting it to the mind. In the meditation time, you can hold it thoroughly. When these things are done and developed in the mind, and Buddha said that one can develop psychic powers and attain whatever thing he has not attained, because that with the fourth jhana, concentration level, it is the key to the knowledge where one can, whatever the knowledge is possible in the world, Buddha said, can be achieved by at that stage.
The things, these one actually, what we should do is, for example, there are a lot of dhamma here. The first thing is we should know what is there. And then we have to keep in mind, our mind should be that gatekeeper like that. And keep every time, every minute, every second, every action. And we have to keep in mind, from there and so forth. So to do that, we have to practice and practice and practice. Then, we can become the state what you are talking about.
Yeah.
It is not a simple
thing. It works.
It can be done.
It can be done and it works without you knowing. I mean, when I was developing the mindfulness at the beginning, and I was thinking that it's not working for me. But I was keep doing it for the sake of doing it. And then I found that when I'm going to work, the first hour I'm mindful. I mean, having done it for sort of a year or so, I can remember that, I'm mindful going to the work. And then it sort of disappears when you go to work because that, you know, the other things are coming and it's loaded. And then there was a time that it is, I'm mindful going to the work and that I'm mindful for about 1 hour or so at the working time as well. Time to time you work and but the mindfulness comes. And later the mindfulness with me for the whole day. you know, it developed. So by that time I realized, yes, this is working. This mindfulness meditation is working. It takes time. It takes time. Because why it takes time? Because we have been living the other way around for a long, long time. So when the sun is taken to mind and practice for a long time, it remains.
And it's not only the mindfulness, actually mindfulness is important, but not only mindfulness can do the things, but you have to have the effort to stop wrong things, isn't it? Because if you are mindful, you know that when the anger comes to you, but being mindful, you cannot stop that, you have to have the effort.
Yeah, that's the ātāpi sampajānam satimā. That is this ātāpi effort we create. And it's like those troops. Sampajāna is that the clear comprehension. So it is like wisdom. And then the mindfulness. Mindfulness actually becomes the wisdom. That's how you get the wisdom. So the mindfulness is there. And so first you get the right view. Because of these three circling around, you get the right view. So now you are walking with the right view. And then the effort comes in. Like that smoking person, you know, that someone smoking who is going to the doctor, and doctor says that you are going to die. You got this lung cancer or whatever thing it is, so therefore you are going to die. So he got this idea. So when he sees someone who is smoking, because he used to smoke, he feel like smoking as well. Now, if he remember the doctor, what doctor said, then that become his right view, to get rid of smoking. Because smoking is bad, not smoking is good, that become his right view at that time. How did he get the right view? By contemplating about what doctor said before. And so having got that one, he put effort to get rid of the smoking and not to have smoking. He's mindful. And he give up smoking and stay in that without smoking state. So it's these three things circle around. But the mindfulness is becoming wisdom. It is actually bundled in the amoha, the non-delusion part. The both, the wisdom and then the mindfulness. So that's how it is happening. If there's no mindfulness, mindfulness can be so strong because that he can remember, you know, the things said and done long time ago. As well, and as well as this, you know, the nature, the foul nature, all those things are reminded because it's a good thing that it is not allowing you to forget about the good quality, whatever the good quality is there. So all work in the combination, not alone. I cannot say I have the mindfulness but no wisdom sort of thing. Yeah, it goes with the side by side with the wisdom. Okay, we'll stop for today.